crowd gives you goosebumps, cashing a slip makes you grin, and above all, you love making your bookie cry? Then you're in the right place. The number one spot for premier betting advice and wild opinions, shared with a fan base like no other. Welcome home. This is the Punch List MMA Podcast. Here are your hosts, Dale Lippin and Trey Van Buskirk.
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? You are tuned in to the newest edition of the Punch List MMA Podcast, the first episode of 2021. Quite possibly maybe the last episode of 2021. Things remain to be seen. I have no idea what's going on. Could be the first, could be the last. I don't know. Trey, it's so good to see you. It's so good to be back. Just fill me in, man. Let me bathe in your ambiance for a second, man, and just, you know, fill me in. How was your holiday?
It was great. I didn't get Andy Cohen, Anderson Cooper, you know, tripping on acid, but I went wild. I let it rip, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I did about four tabs and went to the nether realm. And let me tell you, this year is not going to be any better than 2020. I've been shown, I've been enlightened. It was a transformative experience. I'm just going to let you know now, it's going to be up to us to steer this ship in a positive direction in 2021.
Now, I was going to ask you, was it weirder tripping or was it weirder just being sober in 2020?
Yeah, I mean, dude, I can't even really tell at this point. I'm not even sure. You know, I've never been more convinced of like the idea of simulation theory being real than I have been the last 372 days. It's been chaos, man, chaos.
So it's absolutely wild. So we were talking and producer Jake's like, how are we already in 2021? That was a blink of an eye. Mm-hmm. 2021, and then we're hit with three UFC events in the course of 8 days, starting on January 16th.
Hence the reason why we're recording now and bringing in the idea of covering the Cater or Holloway Cater card as much as we can now, knowing full well all things are subject to change. We've actually had a hell of a time even putting a bout order together tonight because none of that stuff has been finalized yet. And I don't believe it will be until they get closer to Fight Island. So we're going to go over the fights that we're seeing universally listed on this card, if you will. It's not meant to be an all-inclusive. It's just the ones that no matter what outlet we look at, up to and including official UFC website currently listed. There are other ones that are sporadically intermixed here and there, but we're going to cover as many of them as we can. The ones that we miss, we'll always circle back and touch on, right?
This is pre the god dang COVID, dude.
Gosh darn COVID. COVID, bro.
Yeah.
It's weird, man. I mean, listen, I've knock wood. I'm have not brushed into said COVID. But It's a weird thing. Are you familiar with Saving Private Ryan?
Greatest movie of all time. Tom Hanks, stellar performance.
Are you familiar then with Black Hawk Down?
Of course. Another stellar,
military
military movie.
Right. So Tom Sizemore plays a character in Black Hawk Down that just kind of walks around, doesn't really take cover, doesn't really do much, isn't really generally concerned about anybody other than his men. And not to align myself with such a momentous figure, but I operate very much the same way. Everybody's got different beliefs when it comes to this thing, and I try to respect as many of them as I can. But I am Tom Sizemore in Black Hawk Down. I'm just walking around living my life the most I possibly can, given the current climate. And if something happens, it happens. I cannot allow myself to live in fear anymore. 2020 put me in a state of hysteria for about 6 months, and I just don't have the energy for it anymore.
Dude, you're on a different level. I put myself in parallel with maybe Mark Wahlberg in the movie Ted, just getting drunk with my teddy bear, dude. That's pretty much my barometer.
right. Just getting drunk with your Thunder buddy. Listen, I'm okay with that too. Whatever helps you get through the day. I will say that your locks are getting longer. You got more flow, more quaff to the locks. What's going on here? We use a new product. Do we need a haircut? What are we doing here?
It's that natural seawater. It just adds that volume. It adds that poof.
Yeah.
It's looking good, man.
Yeah. I see that, man. It's really got like a very salty, crispy, sailor approach to it.
You know what it is though?
What?
It's the protein that's going in my body.
Yeah. I see how you're trying to push me to an ad read. I wasn't ready for it yet. I was going to ask you how your New Year's was and if you made any resolutions.
My resolutions are to eat cleaner, mm-hmm. which could be done through Stay Classy.
So in 2021, are you doing the Stay Classy ad reads?
No, I'm not prepared yet. I can't do it justice because it's such like a high echelon type meet. I'm not there yet. Again, Mark Wahlberg, Teddy Bear getting drunk. I'm getting there. I'm just not there yet. Resolutions though, I'm going to just be a beast on the mat, dude. Every time I go to jiu-jitsu, it's game on, no more screwing around. Like, you know, who knows how long contact sports like this, especially from a recreational level, are going to keep going on. Support the small businesses and just move forward. That's probably a top of list.
What's going on with your wing? I thought you had a busted wing. Are we just saying we foregoing the busted wing and just still going to jiu-jitsu anyway?
Actually, this sounds really weird and makes me look gnarlier than I am, but the bone that's protruding, if it ever locks up on me, I can press it back. So it's kind of like I'm a Lego. Call me Lego Batman is what
gotcha.
I
mean. So if it pops out, you're just and you're feeling better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, fair enough. Well,
your resolutions though, sir, I'm sure they're a little bit more, formalized and professional than mine.
I am wearing a collared shirt. I will give you that. I don't necessarily know that my resolutions are more polished than yours. I don't even really necessarily know that I ascribe to the idea of resolutions, but I do like new beginnings and I do like the idea of what a new year can signify. It reminds me of like the old days and the old ways. And you know, I'm a big fan of stuff like that. I don't really have any resolutions other than to try to be, a better version of myself than I was in 2021. There was quite a few times in 2021 where I was like, I really feel like I should kick the shit out of myself right now. Like if I knew me and wasn't me, I would kick the shit out of me. I just wasn't necessarily on my A game in 2020. So I'm going to try to rectify some of those things in 2021. Up to and including, you know, trying to live a little bit healthier. I switched over, not drinking as much beer. So I know you got one with you. I understand. I get it. I commend you. Gonna try to clean things up a little bit in that regard. I will say this though, you know me, I love a good cookie, I love a good sweet. And the problem at the office now is everybody's bringing in all the holiday cookies that did not get touched during Christmas and New Year's. So there are just mountains of leftover truffles and cookies shit at the office. And I hate it, man. I hate it because my willpower when it comes to that stuff is,
you know what, next people to do zero. I could see that. I mean, most people like in an admin office, they put the candies there at the front of the desk just to ensure that other people are getting fatter around them. So people are coming to their office. Of course, they're going to pick up the M&Ms. They're going to have the Reese's Pieces. And in the middle of your conversation, maybe you're trying to get a promotion. You're trying to get a raise. That person, all he's thinking is, look at this fat fuck.
Yeah.
Just chewing on these M&Ms. I'm going to have to refill this thing by the time the guy leaves. And all the while, you're loving your treats. You're loving your treats.
Right. Yeah, they're slowly poisoning me, and I'm not even letting them. I don't even realize that I'm doing it. Yeah, so that's the hard part right now is just avoiding all of that stuff. I can pass an envelope of money on the sidewalk easier than I can pass a tray of cookies, dude. I don't know what it is, but them. I'm telling you, man, there are certain fucking cookies that just call to your boy, man. They just do. I don't know what it is. It's just the way of the world in that regard. So,
monster, dude.
Anyway,
little Carla Esparza over there.
A little cookie monster. That's funny. But yeah, if you want to eat clean, if you do not want to eat straight garbage like your boy, if you don't want to be a trash panda raccoon like me, go to Stay Classy Meats. Use promo code FIST. Save 10% on the entire thing. And it's the cleanest, best meat on the planet Earth. We're going to talk about it a little bit later on too with our boy Calvin Cater headlining this card. He's a Stay Classy athlete. And I'm telling you right now, if a guy that's fighting Max Holloway is putting this stuff in his body, you know full dang well that you can trust the quality of it. Because if one of the most elite athletes on the planet is using it, and listen, if you go to Stay Classy's website, you can see the Olympic and world champion level athletes that they sponsor. It's amazing and humbling to Trey and I that they even talk to us, given the volume and the quality of people that they do business with. I'm amazed that they talk to us. It's everything that I could have ever hoped for to have them as a sponsor on the show. So promo code FIST, save 10%. I'm done. Go ahead.
Guys, also, obviously putting the best food in your body, you need to drape your body with the best stuff. I've gotten to that point, Dale, where I'm a large, like through and through. That's what I am.
Right.
I'm worried though that I'm creeping up to that XL, and that's, you know, I got to stay away from that. I got to eat some more, stay classy. The great thing about Allegiance Clothing is they have a taper with their butter blend that doesn't matter if you're a large, it makes you look like you're wearing a medium. It's perfectly drapes your body, conforms to the muscles, the tones, your body, whatever it is. Guys, you can wear these dope clothes. You can look like an absolute stud. You just got to go to allegianceclothing.com, type in the code PUNCH. You're going to get 15% off site-wide.
So let me ask you something real quick. Because here's a fun fact for those listening to the show and those that watch us on live stream, either when it's live or after the fact. So shout out to the people that watch us way after the fact when it's not live. We don't ever acknowledge you guys. I want to acknowledge you guys and gals that watch us even after we're live, and the people that listen to the show but don't watch the live stream and vice versa. Fun fact, Trey's in San Diego. I'm in Charleston, South Carolina. We have never met in yeah. person. This is a strict internet bromance. Okay. How tall are you?
I'm 5. Well,
I don't want to short shame you if you're short, but how tall are you?
What's the male female ratio watching this, dude? I don't know how to answer this question.
You answer it honestly and you own it, because confidence comes from within.
So not what's on my driver's license.
Just tell me how tall you are.
5'10".
Okay. That's the average size male. That's you are a normal Anglo-Saxon sized male. So that's what I'm saying. If you're a large creeping up on an XL, and you and I are the same height, although I'm a little bit taller than you, I'm just trying to gauge things out. Plus we've created a couple enemies over the holiday. So I want people to know, if you're going to talk shit, what size person is going to come greet you at the door whenever that time comes.
Oh yeah. 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 Oh man. We did create a lot of enemies. The Grinch side came out, but
look, man, we can't be happy all the time. We can't be happy all the time.
No, no.
So
that's all right. 5'10" with fucking guns, dude.
That's what I'm saying. And you also run 10 miles at a time, which is ludicrous. I'm not running 10 miles unless I'm being chased for 9.5. That's absurd.
That's because I got lost.
Yeah. Huh?
I got lost.
That's true. You did get lost. Yeah, there was a lot. There was more to it than that. All right. Yeah. We've been beating around the bush. We played catch up here for coming up on, shit, I don't know how long, 13 minutes. Let's go ahead and get into the show. Before we do, guys, every single line that we're bringing to you this week is brought to you by Bet Online. Go to Bet Online, use promo code Armchair, take advantage of all the great sign up bonuses. Trey, do me a favor, write down this timestamp for this, please.
6:14 Pacific time.
That doesn't mean anything to me. Like the time in the show. Producer Jake, timestamp this, please. 13 minutes, 51 seconds. So use promo code Armchair. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Appreciate everybody that's made the switch over to Bet Online. We're probably going to get Dave Mason back on at one more time before the Conor Poirier fight, where he's going to break down all the betting trends. We're working on getting Dave back on for that, to try to bring you guys the most up-to-date info we can on that. So, Trey, are you ready to get into the very first card of 2021? We're back on Fight Island. I don't know if you can see if you can see it, but we're back. We're back on Fight Island.
Are you ready? 69%. I'm ready to fucking shit pump this card, dude.
Okay, so we're going to try to work our way through this card as best we can. So let's, rubbing a crystal ball here, the first fight on the main card, Punhel Soriano versus Dusko Todorovic. 7-0, taking on 10-0. Mm-hmm. We got a battle of undefeated prospects. I'm going to be honest with you, Trey. This is a fight that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Again, they're undefeated prospects. I don't know why you'd have them fight each other this early. There's plenty of other talent sitting out there in the middleweight, light heavyweight area. I don't know why you have to have these guys fight right now. But here we are. They are going to fight. It is going to go down January 16th, COVID-free. What are you thinking? How do we think that this fight is going to play out?
Duska Todorovic, I think this is one that the UFC wants to put a lot of weight in and a lot of stock. I think he can be a star. He's got KO power. He plods forward. He never looks like a guy that has great cardio in his fights, which is going to be a problem with Soriano, which, dude, God damn it. Here we go. Another Hawaiian. You know me. All 2020, I bet on my Hawaiians. Hawaiians scrap. They've got great cardio tanks. Maki Patola, when we look back at that type of Hawaiian fighter, though, his cardio tank fell. Soriano's got a much better cardio tank than a Maki Patola, and he scraps. I don't think he carries the knockout power that Dusko has, which makes me really nervous. I do like this kind of going more towards the distance here, but you know me, this is where a little bit of bias comes in. I want to fare with a Hawaiian, but Dusko looks really good. He looked really good in the Daquan Townsend fight. He's got that KO power, and I think with Hawaiians, yes, they can scrap, but can they take that heavy fist?
Yeah, this is a fight that personally I'm probably not going to bet on or be looking to do too much with, because I feel at least initial leaning towards Soriano here. And the reason for that is there were some things in the Todorovic fight against Townsend that really kind of made me nervous. And you alluded to some of that when you're talking about the plodding forward, right? He is very flat-footed. He does not cut angles. He does not move his head off the center line. He walks forward. He also carries his chin very high and his hands very low. He throws punches like a Rock'em Sock'em robot. Everything comes in short, crisp. Like, it's just very much robot go forward Hulk smash style. I think a person with better than average boxing, with better than average head movement and footwork, really could present some problems to someone like him. And we have not seen him really get pieced up, busted up, or face a whole lot of adversity. Despite having a couple decision wins, they weren't necessarily fights where he had to scrape himself up off the mat to make it happen. I think that there's an opportunity here for Soriano from a cardio standpoint. I think there's an opportunity from a fundamental standpoint to win this fight, but he's got to stay away from the power. And that always makes me nervous. Dan Henderson made a career out of telling people exactly how they could beat him and still going out and winning fights, right? How you beat Dan Henderson, don't let him hit you with the H-bomb. And he would still go out there and hit you with an H-bomb. Wouldn't do shit else except hit you with that. But you know what? He made a living and a career and a darn good one at that by implementing a game plan that people already knew what was coming and they already knew how to avoid it. He could still do it anyway. Same thing with Dusko Todorovic here, which is a huge compliment. You know exactly what he's going to do. He's going to walk forward and try to punch your head off your shoulders. Soriano has to cut angles. He has to set traps. He has to pump that jab. He's got to mix up takedown. He's got to mix up clinch. He's got to punish and make Dusko carry him and utilize that gas tank. He has to make him work. He has to make him work. He's got to survive round one. I know that's a lot of ifs. That's a lot of variables in order to make that happen. I'm not totally sold on the fact that he'll be able to do it. I slight lean for me, very slight lean towards Soriano, but it's a very slight lean.
You know what I'm sold on is Soriano's nickname, Storytime. Dude, that's quintessential Hawaiian. Oh, one story time, yeah? That's what we do, one story time? Oh, go get some Spam and Rice, yeah?
Is that how they talk there? I've never been. I don't know. I don't get to travel much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, every Hawaiian's probably like burying themselves right now with how atrocious that is. But yeah, they do say story time, and that's a great nickname. So okay. That's awesome.
The way you sounded, I would have thought he was French Canadian, the way you said that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely when it came out of my mouth, I was hearing it and I was just like, that's not it, but you know, whatever.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll go with that.
Cool.
We'll go with that. Story time. That's okay. Jacob Kilburn at 8-3 taking on Austin Lingo at 7-1. Jacob Kilburn is going to be the underdog here, taking on Austin Lingo. Lingo's at a -220. Kilburn at a +185. Over under on rounds here, Trey, is at 2.5. Initial thoughts leaning into this fight. I like Lingo, and I think there's an opportunity for an inside the distance play here. Both of these guys are aggressive. Both of them throw with ill intent, and both of them have the ability to get the fight finished, whether they're standing or on the ground. I don't necessarily hate an inside the distance play here, but I do like Lingo at the -220. I think Vegas has him right as the favorite. And I anticipate him being able to get a quality win and a showcase of talent win at that on the 16th here.
Yeah, Lingo out of Fortis MMA. Speaking of like Soriano and not really or utilizing angles, this is what Lingo does. Lingo is able to cut those angles off. He's not a guy that's going to circle the cage. He's going to take those angles and come right at you. He's got great technical boxing. Kilburn, on the other hand, he's a guy that's just got wild, unorthodox striking, and that poses a lot of issues. He did that in the Billy Quarantino fight. He literally threw an overhand right, got stomped, ends up getting a triangle choke, I think, against him. Yeah. Something like that. I don't know. Ends up getting submitted. He's had a bunch of submissions against him, and that's because he just leaves himself wide open. He's had a couple Darce chokes against him, against Bobby Moffitt. I mean, the guy is wild to a fault, which leaves him completely vulnerable to chokes, submissions, whatever it is. I think Lingo, with someone that has technical boxing and cutting off those angles, can get in, get out. I think this is, you know, appropriately placed at minus 220. I'm going to go with Lingo here.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with, you know, obviously we're looking at Lingo. He's coming off a loss to Yusuf Zalal, but Yusuf had himself a hell of a year until, you know, the hype train got slightly derailed. But if you're looking at quality of opponent, I mean, a guy like Lingo really cut his teeth in LFA, which I believe LFA to be a quality promotion as far as a lower league that prepares you for the UFC. Obviously, they're showing that the Contender Series is kind of the new foot in the door is a win in the Contender Series. And he does not have a win in the Contender Series to speak of, but he does have multiple wins in LFA, which is what he used to get his shot in the UFC. Obviously lost that fight to Yusuf Zalal. But if you look at a guy like, if you look at a guy like Jacob Kilburn, all three of his losses, like you alluded to, they have come to guys via choke. He's lost via triangle. He's lost via Darce, and he's lost via rear naked. When he was on the Contender Series, he lost to Bobby Moffitt on the Contender Series. When he did get it, make it to the big show, he lost to Billy Q. So his losses are to UFC level talent, and he has, you know, a deficiency in his game that's been exposed. So I don't necessarily know that Lingo is going to go out there and get a submission win. But I don't see a path to victory for Kilburn other than being wild, maybe catching him or getting a very, I don't know, it is contentious split decision. I don't think he's going to go out there and dominate from bell to bell. I think it's either, you know, Kilburn by split decision or Austin Lingo by any way you want him.
Yep. Totally agree.
Excellent. All right. Next fight, Joaquin Buckley taking on Alessio DeChirico. Joaquin Buckley at 12-3, DeChirico at 12-5. This fight just came about pretty recently. Buckley at a minus 280, riding the hype train all the way to a massive line there against a grizzled veteran in Alessio DeChirico. Plus 220 on there, and the over-under on rounds is at 2.5. I think an inside-the-distance play is probably something to look for here, but I also like Buckley. As long as he's not drinking his own Kool-Aid too much, I think that he should be able to beat DeChirico, but I'm not completely sold on it. But what do you think?
Buckley's, yeah, he's coming in with the power. He's definitely got the momentum, and he's got them titties, dude. His body composition is funky. Have you noticed that?
He's got to wear custom shirts because he's got a chest. He has a chest.
Yeah, I think it's wild. That's like corn-fed straight-up strength, and that's what he's been able to utilize. I will say in his last fight, it was kind of interesting. When he moved forward, he went with purpose, and it was almost like, I need to go for a KO finish to capitalize on my viral moment with Impa. Like he needed to one-up himself. And like you said, when he plays into that Kool-Aid, that makes me really nervous. With a veteran like Alessio, now, do I think Alessio is going to clip him and knock him out? Absolutely not. He's a very well-rounded fighter. He's very vanilla, hence why his record's like roughly 500. Alessio is a guy that can get in, and he is UFC caliber, but he's not going to get you out. Buckley is a guy that will get you out, and I think if he maintains his composure and utilizes that strength, this should be over fairly quickly.
Yeah, to me, it's a matter of I just don't know how good DeChirico is, to be honest with you. I know, I mean, obviously, we've got a little bit of the whole, you know, Italian wave with Marvin Vittori. Is he gonna be able to capitalize on any of that momentum? But if you look at who DeChirico's lost to, lost to Zach Cummings. We won money on that. So thank you, Zach Cummings there. Mahmoud Muradov lost there, lost to Kevin Holland, who has a win over Joaquin Buckley, but also lost to Eric Spicely, which is very interesting to me that he lost to Eric Spicely, because I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not totally sold on Eric Spicely being all that good. But then he's got another loss too, to Bojan Velasovic. And I like Bojan Velasovic. It's amazing to me that he's not in the UFC still, but I like Bojan a lot. So I don't fault him for losing that fight. But what's crazy to me and what's giving me pause is that he's got two wins, one over Oluwole Bangbosi, who is just a powder keg of power, and a win over Julian Marquez. And Marquez is a prospect to watch. That's a crazy thing to have a win over that. So it gives me pause, because I feel like somewhere deep down inside of DeCherico, he's got elite level talent in him. If he can beat guys like a powerhouse in Oluwole Bangbosi, who we're going to see a powerhouse in Joaquin Buckley, or a wrestler do everything kind of guy like Marquez. So he's got, at some point in time, he has showcased the skills to put it all together, but he's lost three in a row. So do we put anything stock-wise on his back being against the wall, the pink slip possibly being there if he does not get a win against Joaquin Buckley? He has to win here or he's getting cut. He has to.
Well, I don't think there's any value in taking Joaquin at minus 280 unless you're going to utilize him, obviously, as a parlay piece. But what I'm actually really interested in is the over 2.5. And I know that's crazy when you are a KO-seeking machine like Joaquin Buckley. Alessio's never been finished in his MMA career, ever. Not being finished, knowing your back's against the wall, you got a pink slip on your locker. I think this is an opportunity for him to use an output and move around the cage as much as a scared animal can be and try and get a decision win out of here. But I like that over 2.5, and I'm curious what that's coming in as, because that could be a sneaky little play right there.
Let me look real quick while you're talking about it. It's weird that you're looking at it as the over. I guess if you're looking at DeCherico being able to execute game plan, that is the play to make. If you're looking at Buckley being able to execute game plan, that would be also the over under at 2.5 is at a pick 'em.
Ooh, okay.
So if you feel Buckley, I feel like I'd probably take Buckley in the under. If you feel like Buckley, but you're not that confident in it, you feel like DeCherico might do something, maybe the over. But I mean, I would be more so looking to Buckley as a parlay piece. I think come fight night, Buckley will probably be one of the most used parlay pieces come fight night for betting.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And then co-main event, Li Jing Liang versus Santiago Ponzinibbio. Ponzinibbio back after, dude, I don't even think your kids were alive. the last time Ponzinibbio fought, 27-3, taking on Li Jing Liang, the leech himself, at 17-6. Jing Liang, a rightful underdog here, plus 240. Santiago Ponzinibbio, minus 280. Overrunning around here, trades at 1.5. People forget how good Ponzinibbio really is. I know Vegas is giving him a lot of credit here for how good he was coming off the Neil Magny win oh so many years ago. You know, this guy almost dang near died. And now here he is. He's back. He's got a stiff test in him for not having any octagon time in a very durable, very game, very awkward Li Jing Liang. This is a tough fight for me. It's not as cut and dry as just going, oh, Ponzinibbio minus 280. If I'm being completely honest with you, this is a fight I'm looking to avoid entirely based on the fact that I don't know what kind of Ponzinibbio we're going to see after the better part of, what, 3 years away?
I think it was 2018. That's when he last fought Neil Magny, right?
Let me see. Around then. No, 2018, 11-17, 2018.
Okay, so I'm not going to say Lee's last name. I'm just going to go with Li. You sound like you lived in China for like 15 years, the way that it beautifully came off your tongue, but I'm not.
My Mandarin could use some work, but I'm okay. Go ahead.
That was decent. Okay, so Li is predominantly a counter striker. He literally does his work following whatever comes his way. And I think that's a really tough thing for Santiago Ponzinibbio, when he's a guy that's going to pressure you forward, he's going to try and strike first, he's going to try and land first. That's where Lee likes to be worked. And I think for Lee, it's an interesting thing because he's not the strongest dude. He's not the most durable guy. And when you have someone like Santiago who has KO power, that's a really dangerous game to play. It's also extremely dangerous for Lee to play that game when he's taking this fight, what's relatively on short notice for him.
Yep.
I think this is a good fight for Santiago to come back into, even though it's a tough fight. It's a guy taking a short notice fight. It's someone that's not going to overpower you. Santiago, the thing that really makes me nervous, though, is where's his health really at? These aren't like, oh, he was injured, he had ACL stuff. It's like the dude had bacterial infections that almost like killed him. Yeah. He's coming also off crazy arthritis. Arthritis in the UFC? Like what?
Dude. Yeah.
Those are two really gnarly things. And when you look at that, it's like, oh my gosh, can he get in and get out really quickly? Or is someone going to pepper him and just wear him down, erode his bones, make that arthritis just scream in pain? This is a tough fight. I'm going to take Ponzinibbio, but I don't want to play any part in this whatsoever.
I'm not a doctor. I don't think arthritis works that way, but I could be wrong. It could be wrong. I mean, all I know is like my grandma, when she sits down for too long, her arthritis acts up. I don't know necessarily if she were to wrestle, if it would aggravate her arthritis. I don't necessarily, again, not a doctor. I'm not a learned doctor. I have no idea if that's how it works or not. I just don't know if that's something we should.
If you have arthritis and you're trying to punch with arthritis, it's like.
It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, like, dude. It's like
I believe works like that.
It's like brittle bones, man. It's gonna hurt to the core of the bone.
Again, not a doctor. Not sure it works that way. I do want to one more caveat on this before we move on to the main event here. If you're looking at Santiago Ponzinibbio's who he's lost to in the UFC, He lost to Ryan LaFlair, right? So his two losses inside the octagon are to Lorenz Larkin, who knocked him out, and to Ryan LaFlair. Now Ryan LaFlair has the stand up of your average guy out on the street, but his wrestling, his grind, his pace when he was active is elite, right? That's something that concerns me when I look at a guy like Li Jingliang, is that he has that ability to just press you up against the cage, dump you to the mat, mat return, mat return, mat return, over and over and over again, if he chooses to do that. Now, what we've seen with Li, though, is that he will stand and throw and spin and get wild and crazy. He doesn't necessarily, do what he should. He does not necessarily have a very high fight IQ to get the job done no matter what. So I can't bank on him coming out there and being like we talked about with Michelle Pereira, right? I can't count on you, and I'm not going to put money on you coming out and being the most well-informed, high fight IQ, best executing version of yourself when my money's on the line. I need to see that you can do it first, and then I'll do it, right? So I'm going to avoid this fight altogether. I'm not throwing Ponzinibbio in any parlays or anything like that. I don't trust them being away for 2+ years. And Li Jingliang is a decent dog play, but I don't trust him enough to do what he needs to do to get the fight done. In all honesty, I'm avoiding this fight, maybe looking at playing over 1.5. If I'm really down on units for the night and I need to make a comeback, maybe that. Outside of that, I'm avoiding entirely.
Apparently, producer Jake got his PhD because he's saying that arthritis is the swelling and tenderness of one or more of your joints. That doesn't sound fun to punch with, brother.
It doesn't. You're absolutely right. I see that, producer Jake. I appreciate that. Next time, just throw that up on the screen so that way we've got it there. But yeah,
also maybe like put like the little thing that's like N for like noun or verb, whatever it is.
Well, moments like this are our Jamie, pull that up, right? Like, the, yes. Like when Rogan play, like, Jamie, pull that up. This is that time. Producer Jake, stuff like this where we're arguing on this is your time. This is our Jake, pull that up. This is our Jamie, pull that up.
Yeah, but just do it in drawings, like just draw it.
throw it on the screen. hop in, say something. I don't care what you do. You know, we've established at this point, we don't have to worry about you coming on here and saying weird off color stuff or anything like that. You can just interject as you please, and just throw stuff up there. So appreciate the medical definition. You're right. It doesn't sound fun to punch when you've got tender joints, but I feel like guys and girls that fight with like broken orbitals and all kinds of stuff like that, they're not worried about some tenderness of the knuckles. Again, not a doctor. I don't have arthritis. I don't know. So anyway, I'm just a mediocre MMA better. All right, here we go. Main event of the evening, Max Holloway at 21-6, taking on Calvin Kata at 22-4. Look, I'm going to break this down as best I possibly can while avoiding the brand bias that exists with having a fellow sponsored athlete. I'm not a sponsored athlete. That's not fair. A fellow sponsored person on fighting on the show, right? We got to set fanboyism aside here. We got to set pseudo professional colleagueism aside here and try to figure out who we think is going to win this fight. Max Holloway -150, Calvin Kata at a +130. Trey, what do you think is going to happen in this fight come fight night?
Well, I think you got one guy that's eating tomahawk steaks, and you got another guy that's eating cupcakes here.
Okay.
Kata is an interesting cat in this fight, and I say that because I think people are putting a lot of weight in the two losses that Max Holloway had against Alexander Volkanovski. Alexander Volkanovski is supposed to be this guy that's this kind of small boxing technical striker, but when you have someone that is, by definition, a technical boxer who also is going to have a 3-inch reach advantage, that is different. This isn't a jockey coming in and fighting Max Holloway. This is a grown human. This is a big dude that has a 3-inch reach advantage and great technical boxing. I don't think that he has to deal with any grappling. There's no defensive, keeping this on the feet. Both these guys are going to want to stand and bang. And I think we've seen Kata's fight, whether that was with Jeremy Stevens or whomever, he throws some variables into his boxing that are really, really clutch. His elbows, his Muay Thai, his knees. This guy is extremely well-rounded, and I think people are kind of pigeonholing him into just this technical boxing. He is way, way more broad than that. And I think this is going to be a big test for Max Holloway. Yes, he's been on the big stage, but big stage, this is Fight Island. There's no one around. This is Kata going back to Massachusetts and just hanging with the boys and just throwing freaking bows, dude.
He's just chucking knucks. Is that what you're saying?
Chucking knucks.
You think he's chucking knucks?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. It's like we're talking about a Max Holloway that if he were to lose on Saturday the 16th, or whatever day that is, I believe that's a Saturday card. If he were to lose on the 16th, you're talking about a Max Holloway that's lost 4 of his last 5, which seems very difficult to wrap my head around. A Max Holloway that is losing that frequently, right? So that's a bit concerning to me because I just don't like the way that trends from a numbers perspective. You don't have a guy that goes on a win streak that Max Holloway does and then have a that big of a shift in the losing direction. Now, I say all that knowing full well that Max Holloway for the last 5 years has been fighting the most elite competition that the featherweight division has to offer and is continuing to do so. So it's not unreasonable to expect him to alternate wins and losses or have some a downturn in performances. What concerns me, and shout out to MMA by the Numbers, which is a great MMA account that you can follow on Instagram, Twitter, and I think they have a YouTube channel as well. I'm just going to go ahead and promote them here. They put out a graphic today, yesterday, something like that really kind of shook me up a little bit because I had a point I was going to make anyway, but here we are. There are only 4 fighters in UFC history that have absorbed more than 900 significant strikes.
Oh.
Max Holloway is one of those 4. Now, of those 4, right, because we got the big eyes there, of those 4, 3 of which were knocked down a combined 7 times, right? 3 of which were knocked down a combined 7 times. Do you know how many times Max Holloway has been knocked down in the UFC?
Zero. Yeah.
My man has absorbed over 900 significant strikes in his career and has been knocked down zero times. That does not give me the warm and fuzzies when it comes to betting on him standing there and boxing Calvin Kattar. I like Calvin Kattar a lot. I enjoy his skill set as a person who enjoys the sweet science of boxing more than any other aspect of fighting. You know, you're a jiu-jitsu guy. I'm a boxing guy. I love watching Calvin Kattar fight. I am concerned about the fact that he's going up against a guy that has never been knocked down, despite the fact that he's absorbed over 900 significant strikes. The flip side of that coin is that some point in time, that brain is going to go, I don't like being hit anymore. And if Calvin Kattar can hit him cleanly, which I believe that he will, this might be the time where we see the lights go out. Boy, does that sound ridiculous to say, given the stats I just gave you. Mm-hmm. But man, does that give me pause? And it really makes this a very difficult choice for me on where I want to put my money on Saturday night. I will say this, though, is that I'm going to let this normally, right? And when we had Dave Mason on the show, he told us the best time to bet a fight is as soon as it's announced. That's when the lines are going to be as unadulterated as possible before the sharps can come in and start, you know, moving the line around. This is a fight I'm going to wait until damn near walkout to bet, because if I'm up on the night, I'm going to bet on Calvin Kattar.
Okay.
If I'm down on the night, I'm probably just going to stay away from the fight, because I don't want to chase the dragon with Kattar and try to bring myself back from the depths by betting on an underdog. But if I've got a little play money and I'm looking to throw some sprinkles on my cupcakes, I'm going to throw some money on Calvin Kattar. If I'm down, I will either probably avoid, or I'll go with the safer money in Max Holloway. But this is going to be, dude, this is going to be a game time decision for me, because I really don't know what to expect here. The momentum of Rob Font butchering Marlon Moraes has got me thinking that the New England cartel takeover is real and that it's coming right now. But I, again, you know me, I don't like buying into hype. So I've got to suppress my emotions when it comes to, you know, how I feel about stuff like that.
I think that this is the moment, we've talked about this for a while, that Max Holloway's got the marbles going in his mouth. And I think the marbles are finally going to dribble out. And I say that because we saw him, regardless of him not going down, or, you know, to your stat, he's never been knocked down. He has been rocked. He got rocked by Dustin Poirier. He got rocked by Jose Aldo. It's happened. And do I think that Dustin Poirier or Aldo carry the same type of viciousness that we saw Kattar and Jeremy Stephens? I think this is the moment we see those lights go out. And this is at a value right now. I don't think it's going to get wider. If anything, it's going to get much closer. And I think Kattar is going to get a lot of value at plus 131 right now. I'm jumping all over it, man. Tomahawk steaks for the boys.
Yeah, I think I can't count on either of these guys getting a finish, though. I don't right. like playing an inside the distance play.
Right.
Over under is rightly set at 4.5. I can't ride the fact that this is going to be that this is going to get end inside the distance. I know I'm concerned about the brain health of Max Holloway. I know that I feel like the Calvin Kattar boxing could be the difference maker, but you know, we have yet to see, I don't know, man. It just feels impossible to me that Max Holloway can drop three fights in a row. I just don't see. I know where people want to talk about it, whether or not he's the consensus greatest featherweight of all time or not. Regardless of whether or not you thought he clearly won the second fight with Volkanovski, I think Volkanovski put on a masterclass the first time they fought. I think the second time Max Holloway flipped the coin the other side and put on a masterclass against Volkanovski. That was in my opinion, one of the worst judging examples I can think of. I just, outside of a bad decision again, I just don't see how Max Holloway loses three in a row, man. I could be wrong, and I've been wrong before. You know, last time that Holloway fought a good boxer, if you want to call Dustin Poirier a boxer, Poirier screwed him up, man. He put a beating on him the last time he fought a great boxer. And I don't necessarily know I'm going to classify Dustin Poirier as a great boxer. He's a very good boxer. He's got very good stand-up. Last time we saw Max Holloway fight a guy like that, he got pieced up and it was bad and it was ugly. So yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of miles on him, but maybe he's got one good one left in him. I don't know. Safe money's Holloway, but scared money don't make money. So maybe Cater's the call here. Again, fight night decision for me. Hit us up on Instagram night of the fight and we'll see where we're going. But I'll tell you right now, if we're down on the night, probably lean Holloway. If I'm up, I'll probably go Cater. I know, which seems counterintuitive logic wise, but that's where I'm at. So,
well, we're going to be up because we're heading into the prelims right now. And this is where we cut our teeth.
This is a prelim. This is where we get cut at the knees at the prelims. Like last three events, man, the prelims have made us their bitch, but we're going to do, we're going to bring things around here, man. All right. Let's rifle through these. Cause we were doing, spent a lot of time there on that main card. And again, guys, all these lines are brought to you by Bet Online. Go to Bet Online, use promo code armchair and take advantage of all the great sign up bonuses. All right, let's get this moving. First fight that we can see, your chick right here, man.
Oh, man,
thicker than a Snicker. Betch Kohea taking on Wu Yan Yan at 10-3, and Betch is at 11-5-1. Boy, I'll tell you what, bro. I'll tell you what. This one's, you know, Betch is at a -110. Your girl Wu is at a -120. Over under on rounds is at 2.5 here. I'm going to be honest with you. I thought Betch Kohea retired. I thought after her last fight, she said she was done. So this is interesting to me. I thought that this fight was – I thought this was a wrap.
This is her retirement fight.
Is it her retirement fight?
It is. It was supposed to be in December, but then she got COVID, and then here we are. This is it. This is
the Rona, too?
Dude, she's 37. Is that – what? When did that happen?
I mean – yeah, I guess. I guess she's 37. I mean, cool. I don't understand. I don't know how I feel about Betch Kohea. How do you feel about her? Let's talk about objectify her slightly, but also tell me how you feel about her as a fighter.
Well, I'm never a fan of fighters that miss weight, and Beth has been one that's always done that. This makes me even more nervous. This is the first card following the holiday season, and regardless of how professional UFC fighters are, Beth Correa has never really, you know, stuck to her diet plan pre-fight, coming off Christmas, coming off New Year's. This is freaking horrible, dude. This is her retirement fight, though, so I'm hoping that she's going to come in determined, want to put a stamp on her career and move forward. A 37-year-old versus Wu, who is, what, 24?
Mm-hmm.
A decade younger than her?
Mm.
Up on the rise, prospect. She's got a lot of energy. She's one of those type of girls that comes in and she's, you know, typical like Chinese type fighter. They throw the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, punch combinations. They're just output versus someone like Beth, who's going to lay heavy. She's going to try and get this thing to the ground, utilize her ground and pound. This fight makes me nervous because I want to see I want to see what Beth looks like at weigh-ins. If she looks in shape, she's going to look motivated. I'm going to take Beth on this as a flyer and say, hey, she's going to stamp her career. Wu, though, don't tell me you're going to put some weight in Wu. She's 1-2 in the UFC. She lost by armbar. She won by armbar.
She won by armbar. She beat Lauren Mueller.
She's not going to win by armbar against Beth Correa. And she's, you know, having those type of combinations and the 3, 4, 5, 6 combinations, there's no weight. There's no power in that. Beth's going to eat that thing up. I'm shocked you're shaking your head at me right now.
I feel like Wu is where it's at. She's a win one, lose one fighter. She lost her debut. She beat Lauren Mueller. Then she lost her next fight. I think she gets the W here. I think Betch Kohea has been washed. Her record is salty for a reason because she's not very good. She is one-dimensional. She's one-dimensional. She walks forward. She tries to throw as best that she can. She is there to be hit. Her head movement is non-existent. She is slow as the day is long. She can't do much of anything other than just take punishment. She's very, very good at just outlasting wars of attrition where you just can't. She's got that giant head, that giant nose, and it can take damage. It's like if Bigfoot Silva was a woman and you put Bigfoot Silva's head on a woman's body, that's what she's got going on. The only difference is that Bigfoot Silva's punchy and Betch Kohea is not. I just think that she's done, dude. When you start talking about retirement, for as long as Betchka Hay has been talking about retirement, and you're, you know, damn near 40, you want to start a family, you want to do this, that, and the other, bro, it's a wrap. She's taking this vacation to Abu Dhabi. She's going to hang out in the UAE, soak it up poolside, try not to get scorched alive by the sun in the summer there, and just chill out and get pieced up. Take that 30-27L and go back to Brazil. I do not want to bet on a Brazilian in Fight Island until I see a Brazilian win in Fight Island. This is going to be the first fight on Fight Island when we go back, and it's going to be a Brazilian. I damn sure I'm not betting on a Brazilian in Fight Island. They did terrible there last time they were there, and I'm not betting on Betchka Hay. She gets none of my money ever. And you know, woo is where it's at, dude. Woo. I'm telling you right now. And when she wins, I will be on our Instagram live doing Ric Flair. Woo! Whenever she wins, come January 16th.
All right. Honestly, once Beth gets to weigh-ins, if she makes weight, you know, this might have to be a little side play for you and I. But I, dude, woo!
When she beats Betchka Hay, one of our, because we're going to be launching merch this year too. I think we should do a Woo Clan. Not Wu-Tang Clan, because obviously we'll get copyright. They'll come at us. But we should do some Wu-Clan shirts, because I feel like Wu's this girl's got weight behind her, man. The Chinese takeover is real in women's MMA.
All right. Well, woo-hoo.
Woo-hoo indeed. Phil Hawes at 9-2, taking on Nusreddin Imovov at 9-2 as well. Phil Hawes is a brick shithouse, Trey. -160, taking on Nusreddin Imovov at +140. Over under on rounds here is at 1.5. Probably the most common play that you're going to see is Phil Hawes by knockout here. Do you think that's what's going to happen, or are we going to get a little bit more creative than that?
We're definitely going to get more creative than that. That's what the public would think. You know, Phil Hawes, he's built so strong. I mean, the guy is straight muscle, which also leads you to believe that guys with heavy muscle like that don't tend to have the best cardio. Nusreddin, he's no stranger to Fight Island. I was bummed when he fought Jordan Williams, because we had picked Jordan Williams, who was an athletic fighter. Obviously, he thought he got poked in the eye, and that was the whole reason he cried about it like a little bitch. Nusreddin Imovov, though, he's a physical guy. He's very, you know, smooth on his feet. Phil Hawes is going to be much, 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 much more physical than Jordan Williams was. He's going to be a guy that's going to bull rush you. He's going to try and get the knockout quick. Phil Hawes is a big step up competition than from Jordan Williams, though. He's going to come in stronger. He's got those crazy dynamite leg kicks you got to watch out for, especially in the first and second round. He's not a stranger either to Fight Island. I think he fought there. Didn't he fight there on the Gaethje card?
Yeah, he knocked out Jacob Malkoon there.
Yeah. So, I mean, Nusreddin is, you know, he's a live dog for sure. He's good, but I just think that Phil's going to get it done, and he should get it done early. I like inside the distance for this more than anything.
Here's what makes me nervous about this fight. If you look at who Phil Hawes has lost to, right? Julian Marquez, Luis Taylor, and Andrew Sanchez. All UFC level talent, right? I do not believe necessarily, despite the fact that a lot of people think Jacob Malkoon is UFC level talent. We didn't see that. He got starched almost immediately, right? We did not see that in that fight. If you look at his contender series win, right, over Kazmurat Bestiev, again, where's Bestiev at? Is he fighting in the UFC? No, he's not a UFC level talent. So we've got Phil Hawes that has two wins inside the octagon, if you will, but they're not over UFC level talent. If you look at who he has lost to, those three losses, or two losses rather, one was an exhibition. The Andrew Sanchez fight was an exhibition. If you look at those two losses, they come to UFC level talent. I think Imovov is a UFC level talent. They call him the Russian sniper for a reason. He is no stranger to having to fight guys that want to stand up and bang with them, because that's, you know, if you are cutting your teeth as a striker, you are in the gym getting good at striking. That's what makes you a striker. So you are fighting and sparring against guys that are giving you those looks, that's what makes you good. Now, that doesn't necessarily translate that every person you fight as a pro is going to sit there and want to throw hands with you. But I think that he's not going to shy away from the idea of a physical conflict with Phil Hawes. what he cannot afford to do is go out there and get lazy and not get his timing very quickly, because Phil Haas has the ability to turn the lights out from a glancing blow. He is a brick shithouse. He is not going to be deterred by fighting on that side of the planet either. If you remember, Phil Haas used to fight in Brave FC, which is based over, you know, Eastern Bloc, Europe / UAE area, depending on where they're, well, you know, where they're holding their events. But he's fought in Brave, so he's used to the trip. He's used to the flight. He's used to the food options. He's that the Fight Island means nothing to Phil Haas, right? Imovov, you know, French fighter. He does not have to go that far either. I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal for him to fight at Fight Island, you know, in that regard. But I don't necessarily know that I love Phil Haas in this fight. I think Vegas reflects that, the minus 160. That's kind of like saying we like you, but we don't love you in this fight. I think Imovov's got more than a fighting chance here. Don't necessarily know that I'm going to throw a lot of money on him or any money at all, but I do like Imovov's chances. Over-under on rounds is at 1.5. I kind of like the over there, because if Phil Haas can't get it done in round one, then he's got a real problem on his hands for round two and three. So maybe leaning over 1.5 there, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I like over and a half. I like inside the distance, though. Phil Haas, when you carry that muscle, you're going to gas out. You know, Nassim Radim is a guy that he's got good footwork, but if you get clipped by Phil Haas, you're going to be very flat-footed very quickly. So I think that someone is going down. It's going to happen inside.
Yeah, you'd be flat on your freaking back. You know, be flat footed. You'd be flat on your back if Phil Haas catches you. That dude hits like a truck.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of hitting like a truck, guys that are shaped like trucks, Carlos Felipe, 9-1, taking on Justin Taffa at 4-1. We got a heavyweight tilt here. These guys are going to be tipping the scales at 265. Both of them are going to be cutting weight to make that 265 limit, despite the fact that they're both shorter than you and I are, now that we've established how tall you are. Felipe in a minus 190 favorite over Justin Taffa, plus 165 over on rounds at 1.5 here, Trey. Kind of like Felipe coming off the strength of his last win, but don't necessarily know that I love it, because we got heavyweights that are trying to punch each other in the face. Neither one of these guys are keen to take a step backwards. I don't necessarily know that we'll see it this fight either. I think that we're going to have two big boys meeting in the center of the octagon and throwing down for as long as it lasts. They have a common opponent in Jorgen De Castro. Felipe beat Jorgen, and Taffa got knocked out by Jorgen De Castro. So take from that what you will. What do you think? We got two heavyweights that are going to punch each other in the face. Is it worth taking a stab on Justin Taffa at plus 165? Or is Carlos Felipe the first Brazilian to get a win on Fight Island this time?
Well, I think the Jorgen De Castro is not a good barometer to weigh these guys up against. Jorgen De Castro looked like absolute shit against Carlos Felipe. And Carlos Felipe, I don't know if it's maybe I just don't like him. I don't like the way he looks. But the dude drinks his own Kool-Aid. When he was in the Jorgen De Castro fight, he's doing the whole like, oh, come at me, trying to make it look like, oh, I want to bring the brawl. Bro, only do that if you're actually going to knock someone out. You don't have knockout power. I don't think he has knockout power. I think Justin Taffa has knockout power. I think that Carlos Felipe has got good body shots. And I think that's what makes him a UFC caliber athlete, is he wears you down with those body shots. Justin Taffa, outside of the Jorgen De Castro knocked out, he's a relatively durable fighter. The problem is he's a do or die type stylistic fighter. He's a guy that's going to throw that overhand right. He's going to be, knockout seeking. We haven't seen Carlos Felipe actually endure any damage. The Jorgen De Castro thing, he was fighting pillow hand, non-motivated, fat piece of shit guy laying at the side of the cage.
Wow.
Felipe wanted to make that fight more exciting than what it was. He fought a guy that had zero motivation and didn't even want to be there. Justin Taffa is coming in this. I like the disrespectful line, because I think Justin Taffa is going to look at that and he's going to be like, no, this guy's got pillow hands. He's going to try and hit my fat stomach, but I'm going to move through. I'm durable enough to get it. That's why when I look at this fight, rather than picking Justin Taffa or Carlos Felipe, I'm going over 1.5. I think Justin Taffa is durable enough to get out of 1.5. I don't think that Carlos Felipe has the KO power to get him out of 1.5. Over 1.5 is super juicy in this. And you know me, I can't stand betting heavyweight fights, because I just think it's a fucking beyond a gamble. But over 1.5 is uber juicy.
Over 1.5 sitting minus 170 I don't know if you see any value in that or not. A minus 170 on heavyweights throwing is a little tough for me. You know, that's a bit of a scare off for me because I'm looking at it going, you know, I'd have more value in, you know, I'd have just as much value picking a winner as I would the over 1.5, because the last thing you want to do is I'd look at that and go, who do I think is going to win the fight? Because if I think Carlos Felipe is going to win, then I'll just take him at 190 and give him 3 rounds to get it done, as opposed to hoping that he doesn't, you know, or that he doesn't get it done too early. Justin Toffa, on the other hand, if I think he's going to win, and I see the over under on it is at 1.5 and it's at minus 170, I'm just going to take Toffa at plus money, because then I think, well, if I think he's going to win the fight, I'd rather give him the opportunity to knock him out in the first round. You don't want to start, you know, 7.5 minutes in the hole when it comes to something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that, cause that would be the concern, right? Is you go, okay, well, I don't know who's going to win, so I'm going to take the over 1.5. And now you're at the same amount of money, regardless of how you bet. And if you happen to bet, Toffa happens to win, you definitely lost. So I see the logic behind it. I just don't know if I'd touch that. Me personally, I don't know if I'm going to touch that, this fight at all. This might be my beer break fight where I just, you know, just kind of hang out.
Like Carlos over 1.5.
That's Carlos and one over 1.5. Mm-hmm. Damn, bro, you ballsy. You're trying to get big units here in 2021, bro.
2021, man.
2021. Let's get it. Mike Grundy, 12-2, taking on Nick Lentz, the Carney himself, at 39-2. 30 wins, 9 losses, 2 draws. Got to make sure that I say that with enough space in it so people don't think we got a guy with a daggone Sugar Ray Leonard record out there at 39-2. There's a reason why we're enunciating that. Mike Grundy at a minus 150 to Nick Lentz at a plus 132, over on around the 2.5. The wealth of experience. As you know, I believe experience is the currency that pays the bills in MMA. The experience is definitely going to Nick Lentz here. Mike Grundy, though, has all the hype in the world behind him. Can he get it done against a very experienced, very durable, very tough to figure out Nick Lentz?
Didn't you say you never bet Nick Lentz?
I never bet on Nick Lentz, ever. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Why?
Well, here's the thing about Nick Lentz, right? And peel back the curtain on Dale's weird superstition. We'll go superstitions. So a lot of what you guys don't see behind the curtain with the show is I try to do as much analytics as I can when it comes to like the why I'm choosing the things that I'm choosing, style breakdowns and things of that nature. But I'm also equal parts superstitious. And I don't like Nick Lentz for a couple different reasons. Okay. One, I don't like Nick Lentz because every time we see him fight, he's got a different haircut. I don't like guys that switch their hairstyles up. I have a thing with it. The other thing with Nick Lentz that I don't like is I don't particularly care for his nickname. I don't think it's a good nickname. I think it obviously goes by the way he looks. So even still, I don't necessarily love it. The other thing that I cannot figure out with Nick Lentz too is that he is incredibly inconsistent on what version of him shows up, right? So a guy like Nick Lentz will come out and throw spinning hook kicks and knock out Gray Maynard. Okay. Right. But that same guy will come out and have a back and forth battle with Danny Castillo, who I put at the same skill level as Gray Maynard. Then he'll come out and he'll win a unanimous decision over Scott Holtzman, who I believe to be a better fighter than both Gray Maynard and Danny Castillo. And he wins it unanimously. Yeah. But then he'll lose to David Tamer, who I do not believe to be a UFC-level talent. So I'm just so confused when it comes to Nick Lentz on where his actual skill level is. He's a veteran of the game. He can beat anybody on any given night. But any person, octagon newcomer to seasoned veteran, can beat him. And I just can't trust my money with a guy like that.
What I don't understand, though, is, and sometimes we I don't want to say we put weight into this, but when we start to see someone's resume and we see canceled bouts as to who the matchmakers at the UFC are trying to match people up with, they see something that we don't see. And I'm not saying that Nick Lentz has had a bunch of canceled bouts with the high level UFC talent, but his last two losses against Arnold Allen and Oliveira, like the UFC at one point in time thought that this would be a competitive matchup, which shocks me. So when you look at someone like Mike Grundy, do I think Mike Grundy's a great fighter? No, I think he's extremely one-dimensional. I think he's the guy that's going to try and slow this fight down. He's going to wrestle you to death. He's going to keep you up against the cage. He's going to grapple. But his whole thing is, I need to slow this fight down, go to decision. That's why it's set at 2.5. They know Mike's going to slow this fight down. So you, like you said, with his record, you don't know what to think with Nick Lentz. The value is just really not there for me to take Mike Grundy, though, because Nick Lentz has the ability to do something weird like a spinning back kick or whatever it is and get this thing done. Conservatively, if I had to take a pick, I'd probably go Grundy just because I like the grapple heavy, you know, slow the fight down, get this thing to decision. But I don't like this.
Well, the other thing, too, that bugs me with Nick Lentz is he's a grinder. And you have no idea what to do with a grinder, right? Because grinders get caught because they constantly shoot takedowns. They're constantly within striking range of somebody. Or if they go up against a guy that's better at doing what they want to do, right? Grinding, wrestling, clinch, whatever. Then they get beat. Like Nick Lentz is good everywhere. He is great nowhere. And sometimes he shows up really in shape and sometimes he does not, which makes me nervous because I just don't know what version of the guy I'm going to get. Probably going to avoid this fight. Maybe look at Grundy as a parlay piece, depending on how he looks on weigh-ins. But I just don't like this fight. So yeah. All right. Keeping it moving. Oh, there it is. First one of 2020 or 2021. First one. All right, we got two more fights. Let's rifle through these real quick. Ramazan Emiev taking on David Zawada. Emiev at 19-4, Zawada at 17-5 here, Trey. Emiev at -255, Zawada at +215. Over on rounds, 2.5. I'm feeling a certain type of way about my man Zawada. I'm telling you, bro.
how do you bet against a Dagestanian neckbeard, dude?
Explain you're right. That to me. You're right. I should not bet against him, but can you tell me who the last person David Zawada beat was?
No.
Abubakar Nurmagomedov.
You did that because one, if I even saw it, I would still say I don't know because I can't pronounce it.
He also goes by the fight nickname of Sagat. Now you tell me. A better dude, it does not get any better than that when it comes to fighting nicknames. Are you serious?
What is Sagat?
What?
What is Sagat?
Dude, from Street Fighter?
Bro, I know
he's the final fight, he's the final boss in the OG Street Fighter. Sagat with the eye patch? You have no idea what I'm talking about. No. He stands like this. You have no idea who I'm talking about.
Wow. Well, I know the guy that wears the gi and the blonde hair. That guy was
cool. Bro, I'm not talking about Ken.
Ken.
I'm not talking about Ken and Ryu. I'm talking about Sagat. So David, listen, I like Emiev, right? And you know me. I love my Dagestani warriors. I love my Caucasus Mountain warriors. I love my neckbeards, right? Neckbeard brethren, what's up? I love all them guys. I really do. And Emiev is such a weird dude. Emiev is so strange to me because that dude is his body composition. Like we talk about Chito Vera being like a grasshopper. Emiev is the complete reverse of that. He is nothing but torso. Like he's got like the shortest legs and he's like, he just looks like somebody stretched his ass out, like Stretch Armstrong. It is the weirdest sort of, body composition I think I've ever seen. My thing with Emiev, though, is if you look at who he's beaten, right? Sam Alvey, Alberto Mina, Stefan Sekulic, and Nicholas Stolze. I don't particularly, outside of Sam Alvey, I'm not impressed by any of those guys, to be honest with you. And I really believe that if I'm looking at a +200 dog on this card that I feel like I might want to touch, David Zawada might be that guy.
I can get there. I'll say this because Ameev is a guy that's he is that quintessential Dagestani fighter who's going to drown you. He's going to wrestle heavy. He's going to lay heavy. And for someone that, you know, Zawada, who's more of like a technical striker, utilizes his reach, likes to, you know, really get that pop at the end of his jab. If he does get drowned into deep waters with Ameev, the one thing I actually really like about Zawada, he's got a really active guard. He's a guy that utilizes kind of like those butterfly hooks. He's able to create space. He's actually in drowning positions like that, able to create enough space where he's able to cinch up a, you know, a triangle, which he has on his record. He's able to cinch up some submissions. He's really good off his back. So I think from a standing perspective, Zawada should be able to, you know, create enough distance with that reach and that jab to not allow Ameev to shoot in and get that double and bring this to the ground. But God forbid it goes to the ground, he can hold his own weight depending on how heavy that weight is. And Ameev could freaking lay heavy.
And he's going to need to win this fight. You're looking at this entire card from top to bottom. Plus, there's not a whole lot of dogs that are bigger than Zawada on this card. I don't think we've talked about one that was bigger than 215, have we?
No.
So he's the biggest dog. I think I'll have to look and see what the next fight is. I think he's the biggest dog on this card. If this bout order stays the way that it is, and if that's the case, I'm going to take him. I think at plus 215, if I'm looking at a flyer, an underdog flyer, I like Zawada's chances here. This whole fight, this whole card, guys, from top to bottom, guys, gals, whatever. From top to bottom, is it a situation now where the UFC has put together quality matchmaking for the next three cards? I don't think there's anybody that's bigger than a plus three, or I don't think there's anybody bigger than a plus 300 looking ahead over the next three cards. I don't think that there is. So we've got tough matchmaking, and minus 200 does not mean the same in MMA the way it does. And when you're betting football or you're betting basketball or you're betting these other things, it's two people punching each other in the face, trying to kick each other, trying to separate each other from consciousness, trying to choke each other out, snatch a limb off. That's completely different than throwing a ball through a hoop or having 10 guys or 11 guys on each side of a ball trying to run at 100 yards one way or the other. It's a completely different feel. There's a lot riding on individual sports when it comes to this type of performance that's necessary to win at a minus 200. So it does not play the same to me. That being said, plus 215 here, double my money. I like Zawada in this fight at that value, right? We're talking about trying to identify value in these people. All right, last fight.
Go ahead. He won't be the biggest dog, though. He won't. Alessio Dicherico is going to be the biggest dog come weigh-ins for sure.
Okay.
Okay. That's what I think. But from a value perspective, yeah, he'll be in that 1-2.
What was Dicherico prior to that? He was a minus 210, so or something like that, right? So it'll be a race. So yeah, plus 220. Thanks, producer Jake. Appreciate you, dog. All right, last fight featured prelim, Omari Akhmedov at 25-1, 20 wins, 5 losses, 1 draw. Tom Breeze at 12-2. Two Tom Breeze fights in a year. Isn't this something?
Ain't that a trick?
Now, granted, all things considered, it's different calendar years, but you know, as far as the linear cycle of 365 days, Tom Breeze going to fight twice? I don't know about this, bro. What do we expect here? Omari Akhmedov plus 125 too against Tom Breeze at a minus 145. Tom Breeze coming off a win over a dude that should not have been in the UFC anyway and got slept immediately. Versus a seasoned Omari Akhmedov, who's quietly crept up into the upper echelon of 185ers, 170ers, depending on how he's feeling. What do we think here, man? This is weird.
No, from a guy that's an absolute like mental, you know, head case in Tom Breeze, he must have gotten a mental coach. He feels more confident. This is a guy that he's always been skittish to get back into the cage. He comes back in the cage, has a dominant performance against KB Buehler, who, like, right, absolute joke. Omari Akhmedov, the guy, this is a confliction in styles here. You got a guy that's going to wrestle heavy, who's going to grapple, and you've got Tom Breeze, who's going to try and keep this standing and try and utilize his striking. this is a scary fight because for mental head case type fighters, the worst thing you want is someone that's going to have you on your back and you're overthinking what you need to do to get back to your feet. I think this is a horrible fight for Tom Breeze. I don't like mental fighters, especially when there's a huge confliction in styles. This is what that is. I like Omari in this fight 100%.
Yeah, I do too. I honestly, for the life of me, can't figure out what Vegas is thinking here. No. I just, the only thing I can think of is a lot of dudes in the UK that are just slamming money yeah. on Tom Breeze making this line is what it is. I think Omari Akhmedov wins this fight by drowning. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily know he's going to get done inside the distance, but I definitely think Omari Akhmedov absolutely drowns this guy. If you're looking, you know, obviously he's coming off a loss to Chris Weidman, which sucks because I am, you know, me,
huge Weidman fan.
I'm a huge Weidman fan. Everybody knows that about me. wins over Ian Heinisch, win over Zach Cummings, Tim Boach, Abdulrazak Alhassan, Kyle Noak. I mean, the dude has wins, bro. Yeah. And I don't see where Tom Breeze gets it done. I'm just going to be honest with you. I mean, obviously, his path to victory is knocking out Omari Akhmedov, but you don't think Omari Akhmedov doesn't know that? My man's getting it done. He's going to summon the power of the Caucasus Mountains. He's going to take Tom Breeze down. He's going to freaking drown that Englishman in the middle of the desert. You're going to see an Englishman drown in the desert on January 16th.
Ah, what a painted scene. I love it.
Yeah. All right, guys. Appreciate everybody coming back.
Wait.
What?
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 Dude, did the freaking Legends of All Legends fight get scrapped?
It's not all – I can't – so here's the thing. You're talking about the Carlos Condit-Matt Brown fight, right?
Yeah.
So we have not – I have not been able to locate anything that says that it's on this card.
Wow, okay.
So at least it hasn't been updated anywhere. Now, that being said, we will have another show between now and the 16th. So that's true. Cover it. We'll cover it at that time if it shows up. Again, like we said when we started, if this fight card changes, we'll come back and revisit it. But for the sake of content, for the sake of starting to break down fights, because we've got three events in 8 days, we got to start breaking stuff down. So if Condit versus Brown gets finalized for this event, we'll absolutely cover it next week.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is Carlos Condit anyway, but yes, I agree.
Exactly. I was like, just throw it in, dude.
Yeah. So you got anything else?
I don't. That was a full card, man. I'm excited to watch this thing get probably sliced in half because of the dang COVID, but let's hope it stays intact.
Yeah. So we are going to real quick before we put a bow on this thing, we are going to do something a little bit different this year. Last year we kept track. If you go to our Instagram at Punchless MMA, you can see our record for 2020. And that was with picking every single fight. Adios, Neil. Appreciate you, man. That was with picking every single fighter, as many fights as we could, just doing wins and losses. We've got some new initiatives that we're going to be rolling out this year, and one of which is going to be obviously we're going to break down every fight for you like we just did. But our betting card come Saturday night can and probably will look different than what we say on the show, because from a profitability standpoint, it doesn't do us any good to take an L on a minus 220 guy that gets upset when we weren't betting on him to begin with. Now, what we were doing last year was putting slips in and betting every single fight. But the problem is you end up betting a lot of chalk, and your losses at times can outweigh your gains when that. So we have to be more unit conscious this year moving forward, because despite going, you know, hitting at 66%, we should have been up huge, but unit management became a real issue for us towards the end of the year there, because we went big where we shouldn't have. And then, you know, we went small when we could have gone bigger. And I don't like losing money on people that are minus 200, minus 300, because the integrity of the show says that we bet everything that we suggest. I hate losing money for the sake of just keeping the sake of integrity up. It's important, but it's just losing money for the sake of losing money. Outside of the integrity of the show, I would have never bet a minus 300 person unless I was putting them in a parlay. Right. But I put the slip in because I told you guys to do it, because we told you guys to do it. And I just don't want to do that anymore. It's just, at times it just pisses me off because I'm just wasting money. So we're going to put together a betting card that we're going to release on Instagram, right? You guys usually follow us on Instagram, so you can see all the plays breaking down, broken down prior to fights, we're going to release the same thing, but it will be in the form of like what we're actually going to be betting our money on. And we haven't decided whether or not we're going to do units on it or not, but that it'll be more concise. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you guys do not follow us on social, go to Instagram. That's where we do a lot of our work. Punch Us MMA. You'll find us outside of just posting what our plays are going to be for that fight card. You're going to get inside track as this card evolves, it changes, COVID. You'll get our quick takes as to what we believe. Even after weigh-ins, we're really active as weigh-ins, what fighters look like. The Beth Korea fight, I swear, if you don't think I'm going to be extremely active, you know, either body shaming and or seeing what a 37-year-old looks like in a fight against a 24-year-old new stud, it's on. So, guys, check us out. Punch Us MMA. All the info's there.
All right. Appreciate you guys. The best way to support the show moving forward is to support the sponsors that endorse the show. Stay Classy Meats using promo code FIST. Allegiance Clothing using promo code PUNCH. And then Bet Online, use promo code ARMCHAIR. Appreciate everybody stuck with us in 2020. We absolutely kick the shit out of 2020. 2021 is going to be it's going to bend the knee, Triple C style. I appreciate everybody. We've got big stuff on the horizon. I know we say that every week, but you know, money moves take time and there is stuff in the works. And when it comes, you guys will be excited about it as excited as we are. So appreciate everybody. Take care, be good to each other. And we'll see everybody on social or next Tuesday for a live stream and another recording. Peace out, guys. Appreciate you.
Bang, bang.